It's quite fitting that the first reading of the year be the foundation of the universe. You know, in the beginning was the Word, and in the book of Genesis, let there be light. So we begin with the Word, which really represents the Om vibration. It's interpreted differently in some of the Christian teachings, but what was really meant by that was the vibration of sound, which is a whole long teaching in itself, of course. In the practice of Kriya Yoga, one of the early techniques we learn is to commune with the sound of Om, and a tremendous amount of our path is really engaged with Om in the form of music. And it's not merely that we follow that technique of communing, but it permeates the way we practice. You know, there are other yogic paths or self-realization paths that don't employ music and chanting in the way or to the extent that we do. So it isn't a given that once you get on the yogic path, that communion with the Om is an automatic part of it. But it is really fundamental and has always been fundamental to the way Master brought the teachings to us. In fact, he spoke of chanting, and he said that phrase which is often quoted, chanting is half the battle. Meaning if you can train yourself to sing and to repeat these chants, often musically, then you are already moving into the Om vibration, and you're already moving into where we're trying to get. There's been some very interesting studies, and I'm sure you've seen them as I have, and I just see them randomly, so I don't know deeply, about the using music to help people who have fallen into states of Alzheimer's, in which they have become disconnected from this world and have lost their ability to communicate because of brain diseases. It's very important to understand that the physical brain and the physical body is the vehicle for the consciousness to express itself. And even if the physical vehicle becomes impaired, it doesn't mean that anything has happened to either the consciousness or the soul. It just means that they can no longer speak like this. It's very much like the radio broadcast may still be going on, but if your particular radio is broken, then you can't receive it anymore, but what's being sent is not impaired, only our ability to receive it, or in this case, the ability to communicate it outward. But because it's a brain disease, according to the way they've been talking about this, music emanates and relates to a different part of the brain than speech and other kind of intellectual cognition does. But that in itself is an interesting fact, which I'll talk about in a little bit more. I can't expand upon this because it's not my field of understanding. But they've had remarkable experiences when they've had people who have been unresponsive even for years, and they will play for them or give them access to the music that was important to them earlier in their life. And somehow that doorway will open, and then unresponsive people will suddenly be singing or dancing or even interacting in other ways because that part was not broken. And also, there's another factor there which is more subtle, which is not what the doctors are talking about, which is that all of creation is the Om vibration. The silence and the stillness of spirit beyond creation, and the spirit moved across the water, is how it says. So there becomes movement, and with that movement becomes sound. And our communing with the Om as a meditation practice is, instead of communing with all the other words and sounds that are going on outside and even in our own thoughts, all the other words and sounds that are all related to this external world, we replace all that noise gradually with the simple sound of Om. Because what we're doing is we're getting back to the source point of all those thoughts. In the beginning was the Word. You know, the first word went out then. I mean, it's a symbol. It's how it all starts. And that first word is actually the sound of Om. There was this woman named, now I knew her name and now it's gone from her head. I had it perfectly, but I've lost it. This woman who came, that Swami met, who was a sound healer. And she was a psychic person. Many psychic people see light, they see your chakras, and then they can tell you that this is happening and this is what you need. One of my friends, Crystal Starr, who was born this way, she just always could see the chakras. She didn't even know that people couldn't. And she just was the way she was made. She just saw that dimension of things. She enjoyed working on me because, as she said, my chakras were very vivid. I said, I should hope so. My God, almost 50 years of working with them, something should be in there. But in any case, this woman, Sherry Edwards, she had the capacity, when she would look at people, she would hear their om. She would hear their particular variation on the om. And she said everybody had a melody, just like people have a light picture, everybody has a melody. And she was able to see where the dissonances were in the melody, and then she would tone what was missing, and in that way bring you back into harmony with the om. Just to finish her personal story as she told it to us, she discovered this ability when she was somewhere in a rural area with her daughter, and her daughter had an accident and was bleeding, and bleeding so profusely that it was clear that her life was threatened. And they were some distance from a hospital, and just intuitively, Sherry started toning, and she was able to stop the bleeding when she had the right tone. So she toned her daughter all the way to the hospital and held off her bleeding to death. And then, of course, began to follow through and see what else was possible. Her effort with us was she was trying to make this more than personal. And she had developed this little sound healing machine that you could program, or she would program it with your tones, and then you'd lie at night and you'd listen to your tones, and it would gradually put you in order. Swamiji was always extremely interested in any innovative, anything that was innovative, consistent with Master's teachings, moving us into a higher reality. So he invited this woman to come to Ananda, and she stayed there for some days, I think actually some weeks. And we all sort of tried to work with her. We were living here, but Swami invited us to come up and at least be part of it because he was so intrigued by the whole thing. So this went on for some long period of time. The lady was a lovely lady and completely sincere, but that kind of psychic ability and business sense do not always go together. So it was a little free form, let's just put it like that. But everybody worked with these things for some period of time. In the end, it did not prove as effective as we had hoped, let's just put it that way. But here's the part that was the most interesting, because she was in our community for a long period of time and went to satsangs and listened to the chanting, listened to the choir, listened to Swami sing. At the end of all these weeks of effort with all this, she just says very casually, oh, you all don't need this sound machine. Your chanting and your music does it much better for you. But wasn't that an interesting comment? Because it wasn't just a statement of belief on her part, or even her own practice. It was her actual expanded perception that when we came together and chanted, when we came together to sing Swami's music, our om auras were shifting to be more in harmony with the om. You know, so Master says chanting is half the battle. Because if you can put our, when we walk around, what we are is we're the vibration of om that we're attuned to, and we're the vibration of light that we're attuned to. And if we can do by our own practices to put ourselves more in harmony with the center, then all our other perceptions and responses to life will also be more in harmony with that. Chanting is half the battle. That's what Master says. Because it certainly helps if your om melody matches the om instead of, or matches the center sound of the om instead of a more dissonant part. Now, in Narayani's book, My Heart Remembers Swami Kriyananda, which I have recommended several times here, those of you who have read it know this story, and I'll repeat it anyway. Right after she met Swamiji on her 24th birthday, about 2003, I think it was, and she was just really becoming engaged with Yogananda's path and was very dedicated to this path. Suddenly she started having some very severe symptoms. She started losing weight and various things. She was living near her father in Elche, Spain, which is her hometown. And they went to the doctor, and she was diagnosed with very serious thyroid cancer, so serious that the doctor said if they didn't operate immediately, she was in danger of losing her voice forever. You know, very serious. So just as cancer sometimes strikes, everything is fine, and then it's not. And it was very confusing to her as to why, now that she had just gotten on the path and just started, this would be happening to her. Her father was also a disciple. He was the one who introduced her. So she has to suddenly deal with this, and she was persuaded by someone else that she should write to Swamiji about it, Swami Kriyananda. She'd only just met him. She was reluctant to trouble him, as she put it, but was persuaded that she needed to write to him. So she did, told him what was happening. He wrote back, he said, listen to my music, it will heal you. So she had then several months that you have of radiation and operation and all of that. And when I was visiting her in Spain, she moved into her father's apartment, and she showed me what was her father's meditation room, which became her bedroom for the duration of these treatments. And it was, you know, what you would expect, a very small bedroom or study with pictures of the masters on the wall, because it was set up as a meditation place, and they'd made a little bed for her on this side. And she basically said for how many weeks it was, she just lay there listening to Swami's music. She said she listened to Swami's music 24 hours a day because he had told her to. But also, she could feel that those sound vibrations were simply reorganizing her physical body. And in the end, she was completely healed, as you are, as you can be from those things. And, of course, the doctors think it was their treatments. But in her heart, she knew it was because the sound of that music, sound healing. Sherry Edwards, there's a cancer dissonance in your sound aura. And everything that manifests on the physical plane begins on a more subtle level. It's vibrational medicine. Connie Hernandez and her husband, Marcel, they call themselves Paradox. They came to visit me when I was ill. The paradox is here, they said. The pair of docs, if you didn't get it. Okay, anyway. The paradox. They practice vibrational medicine as well as physical medicine, which is if you fix it at the source, then the manifestation will naturally also be repaired. Now, some people try to do that, but it takes that energy is more subtle than the physical. So it actually takes more energy, really, to touch that level. Because it being the source level, it's like the sperm and the ovum, you know, the whole life potential is there. That's why the dissipation of sperm for men is so debilitating over a long range physically. Among the many reasons why a libertine life for a man is not good for him physically is because there's so much energy in that life, in that so much potential life force there. These are the more subtle yogic reasons. Women lose that energy every month just because that's just what happens. The bodies are amazing, but they're not designed to last. You know, there's just all kinds of ways in which they get dissipated. But in any case, there's so much the power of potential. You know, when we do the fire ceremony every Sunday, we take the grains of rice and put them into the fire pot. You know, these things, you just kind of do them. You're just putting the rice in. But what that's about is you hold that rice in your hand like this. And the potential, the energy potential in those grains, because they're seeds, the energy potential in those seeds, I mean, where does that come from? It has to be inherent within that. You have to put it in the ground, you have to give it the right sun, you have to give it the right water, the right conditions. But from that tiny seed, another plant will grow. And from that, there will be all these other life potentials. I mean, there's these enormous forces that are just behind what we're able to see, but is actually the moving forces of our lives. This is the principle of Kriya. When we have our initiations and we talk about it, you interiorize, you intensify, you elevate that energy This is what makes yogis so extraordinarily powerful. In Autobiography of a Yogi, they have that amazing story where this is just two policemen who tell this story to Yogananda, that they were in pursuit of a certain man who was a vicious murderer, and there was this person dressed as a sadhu, and he fit the description of the murderer, and the policemen were chasing him, telling him to stop, and he didn't stop, and finally one of the policemen took his machete to make him stop and sliced off the man's arm. The sadhu did not even react to having his arm sliced off. He just reached down and reattached it like this, and then turned to the policeman and said, "I'm not the murderer you are seeking." Yeah. And they felt a little badly. And the sadhu said, "Come to me in a week, you know, I'll meet you under that tree. I'll be fine." It was an understandable mistake, is what the sadhu said. And they went and saw him in a week, and he was perfectly fine. Think of the power that man is holding. You know, it makes political power, it makes financial power, it makes all of it, just makes a mockery out of all those things. But you see, what we're working with as yogis, we are working with the doorway into that kind of power. Into our hands have been delivered the sacred keys of awakening. And it's awakening our awareness of the reason why we were born, awakening our awareness of the purpose of life and the source of happiness. But it's also awakening our awareness of how to awakening that energy itself. You know, this is the Kundalini energy. This is this powerful life force that is planted in it. And all of spirituality is to, that energy is held in an inaccessible form for the spirit, because we've committed it so deeply to wrong behavior, wrong thoughts, wrong values. Not wrong in the sense of evil or satanic, but wrong in terms of our own happiness and wrong in our actual perception of what reality is. So the Gospel of John begins, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was everything. In Genesis, let there be light, and light was everything." So we see this vast world around us, and we have to ask ourselves on the most fundamental level, what do I want to be looking at? What do I want to be bringing into my world? You know, how do I want to change myself? And beginning to recognize, you know, that everything we do makes a difference. The most important vibration that we're working with all the time is the vibration of our own thoughts, which is why Master gives us affirmations that we can work with every Sunday. You know, our Sunday service and then our Festival of Light, it's a little microcosm of the whole story. You know, we start by chanting, we end our meditation with an affirmation in which we focus on using the power of words to bring us into awareness of who we are and what it is we're trying to be. Swami adds this, the intellectual element of words to it, because it's often very helpful to us. We read Whispers from Eternity. Master says in the introduction to that book, which is called Answered Prayers, I love the way he had such a vibrant and original way of expressing himself, and he encourages the reader to penetrate behind the ink and the paper to the vibratory power which is inherent here. When Swami Kriyananda first met Master in 1948, he came all the way from New York City to Los Angeles to meet him, and because he read Autobiography of a Yogi. And Master said, "How did you like the book?" And Swami, who had just thrown away everything that he'd been in order to become Master's disciple because of that book, well, said it was the most magnificent book I've ever read. It had within it the power to transform my life. And Master just said very simply, "That's because it has my vibrations." Well, in 1948, for an American-raised person, Swamiji said all he could think of was like something you stood on that made you shake. You know, he just, like, the word vibrations was completely incomprehensible. He didn't know where to put that. But what it meant was master's vibration from the silence of Om, from the perfect stillness of oneness with spirit beyond creation, there's first that happens is movement. And when that movement begins, and this is duality, everything that was created from the heart of spirit, by spirit vibrating itself into the illusion of these forms. Swami talked about it once like a propeller on an airplane, that once it begins to spin, it looks like a solid object. But once it slows down and comes to stillness, you see it was never what it appeared to be. And so spirit vibrates. So when Master says he put his vibrations into it, for Master even to come onto this planet, he had to assume a personality, had to make a physical body, he had to communicate in ways that were more recognizable through the senses, which is printing books and speaking words and singing songs. It was the vibration behind it that he was putting out, but he had to use something that something other than beings on his own level could perceive. So he writes this book, but what it really is filled with is it's filled with his vibration of consciousness for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see and hearts to receive. To as many as received him, then he was able to give that power. In the last years when Swami was lecturing, in the first years when Swami was lecturing, I believe he was doing the same thing, but there was so much information that he was giving to us, because in 1970, through the 1980s, especially in the 70s, perhaps because of the state I was in, when he was first teaching mostly at Ananda Village to this small crowd of absolute newbies, I mean, there was no mature energy in the room. We were all just completely new on the path, and everything had to be explained. And I always feel like Swami just knew how much had to be explained, so he would talk almost as fast as he could talk. If you listen to those early recordings, they're slightly stilted also because of the technology of the time, so the pitch is a little high sometimes, but his voice was higher, and his delivery was entirely different. His delivery was just pouring out this information. And it was what we were learning, you know, chakras, kundalini, discipleship, all of these different things. But it was also, he was just the force of his energy trying to wrest us away from the melodies we were so desperately singing of delusion into a stronger melody, a truer melody. Later on, I began, when I really knew the teachings, and I didn't have to work so hard even to understand the concepts at all, I began to hear him and listen to him in a different way. And sometimes I would play this, which was very, I would practice this. I would try to, because, you know, sometimes when you listen, certainly I do, you're always anticipating what's going to come. When I recorded the audio book of Swami Kriyananda as we have known him, it was a very interesting experience, because in order to record a book like that, my own writing, every word had to have magnetism. But when you read, you really are always ahead of where you are, because the eye just goes like that. It was an extremely interesting discipline. I mean, and I was reading my own words, which at that time were extremely familiar to me because I'd edited the book so many times, to pretend that I couldn't see past the word that I was saying in order to give each word the magnetism it needs. Otherwise, words are getting missed. I mean, this is an important thing to realize for anybody who reads out loud. If you listen to the recording of Swami Kriyananda of Whispers from Eternity, for me at least, it was a wholly different experience of the book. Because the words in that book tumble so gloriously across the page that one kind of moves with the words. But Swami never got ahead of himself when he read that book. Every single word has the vibration that that word actually needs. And it's not a question of speed, it's a question of concentration. And when I started listening to Swamiji, trying to listen entirely and only word by word to the vibration that he was putting in behind it. Because the words were just a symbol of what he was trying to say to us. You know, when he would say the word love, it wasn't the word, it was the vibration that mattered. Every single word is the best we can do to pronounce the om sound for whatever idea, whatever concept of consciousness we're trying to put across. To understand, it's all just a substitute for the om. And when we learn to listen deeply, we learn to hear the om, which is to say the truth behind every word that we hear. In Autobiography of a Yogi, Sri Yukteswar says to Master, try to tune in behind the confusion of men's verbiage to what it is that they're actually saying. So what would he be telling you there? I mean, you can think, tune into their thoughts, to their intentions, but really, you tune into the om. So the words they're using, you just feel what is the consciousness behind what they're saying. I had the most amusing experience once. I gave a talk at Spiritual Renewal Week at Ananda Village, and it apparently went well because a number of people were waiting to tell me that they enjoyed it. And this one man, he had a very curmudgeonly nature. He had a very good heart, but he just was raised to be a curmudgeon, and he was not going to change. So he waited actually quite a while to come up and finally tell me the mistakes that I'd made and the things that I'd done wrong. But I could tell he was trying to say, thank you so much, I loved your talk. And I just said, you know, there was nothing in me that resisted, because behind the confusion of his verbiage, I could tell that this is how he expressed love. You know, he was trying to be helpful to me, you see. Because he enjoyed it so much, he wanted it to be better. Of course, he didn't perceive what he was actually doing. And thank you, God, I perceived what he was actually doing. You know how funny it is? Chanting is half the battle. Because get in tune with the om, and then you walk through the world and you actually know what's going on around you. Isn't that a marvelous experience? So much of the time we're so confused. I'll end with one last comment. Swamiji was very, very careful in the way he supported us. He was very honest, and he was very careful to support us but not flatter us, and to make us strong in the soul but not strong in the ego. So he was absolutely honest in his comments, and you always knew that he was telling you the truth. He was supportive. He was not critical. He did not say negative things. You know, he saw no value in that. But his compliments were very careful. When I would write, he would say, you know, things like, this is okay, this is good, this is excellent, you know. It was always, he would be positive, but always in exactly the right way, and I knew just what he meant. One day, for some reason, he happened to be saying some specifically positive, out loud things to a few people in the room. I don't know what caused it, but it started it. And I was eager to be noticed, because if he was passing out compliments, I wanted one. Which was, you know, not a real noble motive, but nonetheless, there I was. So without actually doing anything, Swami could read my thoughts. There was no necessity for me to do anything but just think it. He could feel that he had gotten himself in a pickle, because he needed to say something to me or else I was going to be really upset. So he said, well, Asha, you're a lot less confused than you used to be. Which, of course, it was a compliment, but but wow. But the more I thought about it, I realized that was really high praise, because I was a lot less confused than I had been before. And that's the whole path, isn't it? From delusion to truth. The less confused we are, the more we're listening to the om, the more we hear those chants in our mind instead of the confusion of our own misinterpretation of reality, the more free and powerful we'll be. In the beginning was the word, and let's make best use of it. God bless.